Welcome to Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, where we tackle big questions about our world, from politics to technology, our bodies and environments. To do this, we're catching up with researchers who are challenging existing ideas and seeking new ways of solving some of the biggest challenges facing us today. I'm John Worsey, your host and a writer at the University of Portsmouth. Today, we get to meet two researchers who travelled to one of the most remote, inhospitable regions on the planet in the pursuit of science.
I mean, considering the number of scientists and geographers in the whole world and the number who get to go there, it's pretty uncommon.
The scientists travelled 7,000 nautical miles on board a Royal Navy ship during its annual trip to the frozen continent of Antarctica. We all know a sailor went to see what he could see. But how often is a scientist given the opportunity to travel to far-off places in the name of research?
It's pretty uncommon for us to go onto a naval ship. And obviously that's something that HMS Protector itself was trying to increase the amount of science and help scientists get down there.
That's Professor Faye Cuthero, a LifeSolved alumna, if you recognise the name. Faye and her colleague Dr. Claire Boston were given a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity last year. They joined the British Royal Navy's ice patrol ship, HMS Protector, on a scientific and conservation mission to the Antarctic.
Captain Millie Ingham, who was the captain of HMS Protector, they have the ability to take 12 non-Navy personnel, so 12 civilians on ship. Often that is carrying people backwards and forwards to Antarctica to different bases in Antarctica. But they decided they really wanted to do a bit more science. They regularly do sort of hydrographic surveys of the area, but they wanted to do a little bit more around glaciation and around pollution. So they contacted the university to see who would be willing to go over Christmas and who had the kind of skills that would be required to do that work out there. And both myself and Claire were very lucky. We were selected to do that.
And it was 6 weeks, so a couple of weeks before Christmas. We left mid-December and we came back towards the end of January.
In case you were wondering what hydrographic surveying is, it's how you measure and map underwater surfaces. And when 98% of the continent is ice, it's an important engineering tool. The Royal Navy uses the data to update charts that ships use to navigate the area safely. So, while the crew was hard at work, our scientists had their own projects to keep them busy. Here's Faye.
So my specialism is environmental pollution, and predominantly I have looked in temperate and tropical areas. And that kind of pollution could be anything. It could be chemical, so we might be looking at nutrients that are getting into waterways and causing algal blooms, or we might be looking at pesticides coming off farm runoff, but also particles, so things like microplastics that are getting into waterways or into the air. I work across multiple different areas, land, air, water, and I work across chemistry and physical pollution, but I've never done polar work. So when the opportunity came to go to Antarctica, I was like, yes, please. It was very different to what I'm used to. So the sorts of places I go are often very heavily polluted. So they're not necessarily the nicest places to go. Even if I might be going, for example, to the Caribbean, I'm likely to be going to an area of the Caribbean the tourists don't see and has a pollution issue. Whereas going to Antarctica, I was going to something that is considered pristine and looking for early indications of pollution. We tend to think about our immediate environment. So we think about, you know, the rubbish we put in our bins, and we forget about how far that can actually travel. That can go around the world. If it's mismanaged, it might then be incinerated, and ash from that could be getting into the atmosphere, and that can be taken to the top of Everest or to Antarctica. Things in the water, obviously the oceans are all connected to one another, so things that come in to the North Sea can make it through to Antarctica. So it's really understanding that global scale. Antarctica is breathtaking, having been there now. It is beautiful. I can completely understand why people want to go, but that will have an impact. If people are going, there will be an impact on that environment, and I wanted to monitor what that impact would be. The ship itself is obviously quite big. HMS Protector is a large vessel. So there are smaller vessels, ribs, called Zodiacs. And we would take one of those and I would go to a bay closer to shore, etc. I would look at the water. So I'd maybe tow a plankton net to collect the microplastics in the water. I would collect water samples, which I would then filter and acidify and bring back to look for metals. And then the same for the antimicrobial resistance genes. I would freeze those samples so that the DNA was preserved and I could analyse that when we got back. I also took sediment samples where I could find sediment. It was quite rocky. The sediment is a very good record of what's happened in previous years. You can imagine something falls on the sediment and is slowly buried. You can look at that and start to get an understanding of past pollution events as well. So water and sediment samples, looking across metals, microplastics and antimicrobial resistance.
The Antarctic received a record number of tourists during the 2022-23 season. 105,331 visitors, with 50 ships a day operating around the frozen continent at its peak, with both figures only expected to rise in the future. So Faye's work was very much looking at the present state of Antarctica to see what impact humans are having, whereas Claire was hoping the past could provide some answers about our future.
I research glaciers. I look both at glaciers in the past, so looking at past glaciation in Britain, for example, but I also look at how glaciers are responding to recent climate change over the last 150 to 200 years. I think I was just always fascinated by how glaciers flow, how they erode a landscape, how they shape a landscape. They're incredibly sensitive to climate, so they're very sensitive to changes in temperature, but also changes in precipitation. So they are really are kind of good indicators of climate change. So that's what makes them quite fascinating to look at. As a glaciologist, Antarctica is an amazing place to visit. The majority of the land is covered by glacier ice, so it's just spectacular scenery and a really interesting environment to work in. It's also, we were working on the Antarctic Peninsula, which is a region of Antarctica that's seen really significant warming over the last kind of 70 years. It's warmed by about 3.2 degrees C on average. And that actually makes it one of the places in the world where it's warming the most rapid. And of course, that then affects the glaciers that are there. And we are starting to see glacier recession in that area. So again, it's a really interesting place to work from that perspective as well.
The Royal Navy mission, known as Operation Austral, is part of the UK's commitment to the Antarctic Treaty, which was signed by 12 countries in 1959 in an effort to protect this precious place from harm. HMS Protector, as it's aptly named, is equipped with everything needed to assist the scientists with their research projects. The ship has a full sonar suite, as well as a small survey boat equipped with a multi-beam echo sounding system. High-tech equipment is also used to collect data quickly and accurately. Sounds great, but what was it like working in such extreme conditions with the Navy? Here's Faye and Claire again.
So there were about 80 crew on the ship. They were pretty interested, actually. Most people, you know, it was something different for them to do. I was very lucky. They were really proactive about getting me out onto the smaller vessels, which obviously required me to have somebody steering the boat and a backup person to help us get on and off. So I'd need two or three members of crew with me to go out to do my sampling. And they never lacked for volunteers. I think a lot of them were quite happy to go and get some boat handling practice and get out on the water in Antarctica. It was weather dependent. I think if I had tried to go out when it was really horrible, they probably wouldn't have been as happy. But most of the time, the weather was good when we were out.
Yeah, and for me, the crew were brilliant at trying to get me to places that were ice-free because my locations that I could sample were quite limited and restricted, but we managed to get to a couple of locations to enable me to sample. And because I was on shore, I was supported by the Marines that they have on the ship as well, who were incredibly helpful at helping me collect that data. On a day where we were going sampling and getting on shore, that either consisted of a kind of a day, or sometimes it was half a day, like a morning or an afternoon. So you've got to get kitted up to go onto the Zodiacs, these small inflatable ribs, because if you were to fall in the water, it is very, very cold. So your survival time isn't very long. So you have to get kitted up in survival suits. And then you get onto the Zodiac, which involves climbing down a ladder on the ship, and then you're taking the cross. And then when we were going on shore, I was going to locations where the Navy was already doing other work. So, for instance, one area that I was taking samples from, the Navy was actually doing a cleanup of, there was an old research base that had been there that had been abandoned, and so they were collecting the old debris and litter from that.
Mine was slightly less in terms of the amount of time I was out sampling, but then I had a lot of prep to do once I got back to the ship. Most of the other things, people were going to land, but I didn't want to go to land. I was the opposite. I wanted to go into different bays and around. So we might drop people off onto shore, and then I would stay on the Zodiac and we would go and sample a number of locations within a bay to get a feel for, you know, any differences within the bay. Then we'd do the plankton tow, get the sediment, come back to the ship. And then once I was back on ship, it would probably take between 4 and 5 hours for me then to process the samples, washing down the plankton net, collecting all of the plastics that were in there into a small vial that I could then bring back to the university. But then that would often be sort of every other day, because obviously they had lots of other things the Navy needed to be doing in the location.
Hello, I'm Professor Joy Watts from the University of Portsmouth, Faculty of Science and Health. This episode of Life Solved is a great starting point for a journey into our diverse, life-changing research. We explore everything from the evolution of life to the causes of environmental crises, and we often work in partnership with major organisations to enable innovation in sectors ranging from healthcare to elite sports. If this podcast has you feeling inspired, you can find out how to support our research, collaborate or study with us at port.ac.uk/lifesolved.
So, we've heard what life working on board a Royal Navy ship in Antarctica is like for a scientist, but what happens in their downtime? Here's Claire again.
We were based in the officers' mess, so there's about 14 people that are in that kind of like a common room. Quite often they would put films on in the evening, also read. I took several books with me. Yeah, it's amazing how the time went actually on the ship, even when you weren't actually going out in the field. And in terms of the food was really good. Generally, a cooked breakfast in the morning, but it did vary. They like to kind of, it's not the same every morning. It changes a little bit. And lunch, you've got a choice of, again, a cooked meal versus kind of jack of potato or more salad-y things. There was lots of choice, and yeah, it was good food. It was nice not to have to cook for 6 weeks.
I must say I found that quite a shock when I got back and I realised I had to do all of the cooking and washing up and things that I hadn't done for a while. It's slightly different from a normal Navy ship. Because Protector was a civilian ship that has been retrofitted, it's a Norwegian icebreaker that they bought. So it's a little bit closer to what I'm used to from working on ships in the North Sea and things. I know that when you go down to the dockyard here and they're all grey and they all look the same, it looks very confusing. You know, this is a very different looking ship with the red hull and the white top. And in terms of the accommodation, it's a little bit more friendlier because it's a civilian based ship, which made it a bit easier, I think, for us. Everything is much narrower and harder to distinguish in a traditional Navy ship.
I suppose when you're surrounded by a mesmerising icy landscape, the last thing you'd want to do is be cooped up in your room.
Predominantly, it's ice that comes straight down into the water, so you can't really see much land. There is very little ice-free land in Antarctica. There are on the peninsula, there are some areas, but essentially it's all covered by glacier ice, and then there's icebergs floating around in the ocean.
I have a photo of one with a cruise liner next to it, and you get an idea of the scale. So I would say, depending on the size, it was probably 400 metres across, 18 stories high. Now, that's only above the water, because obviously that will have been, there will have been a huge mass of ice that we didn't see underneath. And it was like a ledge. It obviously just broken off and it had a flat top. That, you know, really, really large areas. Not the biggest iceberg that's broken off and is slowly coming out now, but we did see some big ones while we were there.
I think there was one evening we were coming back up north through the peninsula, and we went through an area that's known as the Lemaire Channel. So you've got a kind of a narrow channel with steep mountains on either side that the ship goes through. We went through at about 10:30, 11:30 at night. We were obviously there over the summer in Antarctica, and the sun doesn't set, but it does kind of dip a bit towards the horizon, so you get these beautiful kind of sunset colours, and it was very calm. The water was a mirror, it was reflecting the mountains above, reflecting the beautiful colours, kind of oranges, pinks, and it was just stunning scenery. And then to kind of add to that, there were humpback whales feeding, because they tended to feed in the evening, so they were coming up. And yeah, it was just, that was a real highlight, I think.
One of the most magical things about that exact, I think that absolutely Claire captured it, was probably the most amazing evening. It wasn't just us up there, the whole crew who weren't busy doing things. Everybody was out and everyone was silent because we were all so captivated by what we were looking at. And I think that will be a very special memory for both of us.
During the trip, the ship documented 74 fur seals, 26 sei whales, 161 humpback whales, 25 fin whales, 18 killer whales, and even one reported sighting of an albino whale. But there was one type of whale that Faye was very excited to see.
Since I was a little girl, I've always been into orcas. I've loved them. They're my favourite marine mammal. We were very lucky. One day they came close to the ship, and we'd been watching the humpbacks before that, which was also amazing. But they're quite slow and you could sort of follow them. The orcas were much faster zooming around the place. So we only saw them on one day, but that was really quite a magical moment. And I think the humpbacks, one of the days, there were about 40 of them feeding around the ship. In pretty much any direction you looked, you could see humpbacks feeding. You see the mouths opening, these huge, huge mouths, and collecting the krill. That was quite impressive.
When we were docked at Rothera, which is the British research base, we were docked there for a few days, and you know, this large iceberg kind of headed towards it, just kind of came towards the ship, and there were, oh, I'd say about 30 seals just relaxing, sleeping. You know, every so often they stick their head up and have a little look around, but they weren't bothered by the fact that they had just appeared next to a big ship. They just carried on and kind of drifted.
And the penguins, not that happy to learn they're quite smelly. when you go to a colony, obviously not individually, but when there's a colony, obviously they defecate where they are. So it's quite smelly. And also they seem to use the poo to help them slide down. So sometimes you would see them and they did not look like they do in a David Attenborough series. They were quite brown covered. And then they go in the water and they'd become all clean and gorgeous again.
And with that mental image, there's only one question left to ask. Would they go again?
Yes, I would. I would definitely go again. Yeah, I'm not sure that my husband would be very happy if I missed Christmas for a second year in a row. But certainly in the future, I'd love to go again. Obviously, when you're there, you see locations and you come up, think of other kind of research ideas. And, oh, I'd love to have been able to stay at this location, and I could have done a lot more at certain areas. So it gives you kind of ideas for future research.
Oh, yes, I'd go back. Again, I wouldn't be going back straight away. I think my kids might disown me if I missed two Christmases in a row. But to go back would be something I would very much like to do. It was very difficult for both of us. We were going in blind. We didn't really know what facilities we would have on the ship and what we would be able to do. So now we have this experience, we could do a sort of more comprehensive planning session if we got the opportunity to go back again.
And who would blame them? The journey Faye and Claire took with the Royal Navy is a great example of how field work plays an important role in scientific discovery. Not only for gathering insights and data that could be used to solve some of the world's most pressing issues, but also reminding us why these precious landscapes need protecting. February 2024 was particularly poignant as well, because this coincided with the 80th anniversary of Operation Tabarin, the secret British mission to Antarctica during the Second World War, which laid the foundations for the British Antarctic Survey. Thanks for listening to this episode of Life Solved. You are very welcome to be part of the discussion. Email us at lifesolved@port.ac.uk. That's lifesolved, one word, at port.ac.uk. Tell us what you think and make suggestions for future episodes of Life Solved. And we'd love it if you clicked follow on your podcast app so you never miss an edition. We'd really appreciate it if you left a rating or review as well. It helps us get these conversations into more ears around the globe. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to support our work, then head to port.ac.uk/lifesolved to find out how. You can also find out how to work or study with us. Bye for now.